From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Newsweek magazine recently published a cover story by Sam Hill entitled, OK Millennial, Boomers are the greatest generation in history. In it, he claimed, quote, millennials seem to think their challenges are greater than those any other generation has faced. Not really. Hill wrote, the Great Recession? Nothing compared with the Great Depression. The wealth gap? Today it's actually pretty close to historical averages. Student loans? Student loan debt is $1.6 trillion. Over the next 30 years, boomers will pass down $68 trillion as part of the great wealth transfer. That should cover it for many borrowers. The article's snide tone dismisses the concerns of American youth who are speaking out about the injustices they face in a world that has increasingly abandoned them to falling wages and economic insecurity, gun violence, climate change, and so much more. Now a new book lays out in great detail just how deep the crisis facing American youth is. Its author is Ann Kim, Director of Domestic and Social Policy at the Progressive Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. She's also a contributing editor to Washington Monthly, and she joins me to discuss her new book entitled Abandoned, America's Lost Youth and the Crisis of Disconnection. Welcome to the program, Ann.
Thank you, Sonali, for having me.
So first, how do you respond to this claim that the challenges facing American youth today are no worse than what, say, baby boomers faced?
Wow, that's my first reaction to Sam Hill's article here. So the foundational premise of my book is that there are 4.5 million young people between the ages of 16 and 24 who are not in school, not working. That's 11.5% of all young people. And this is happening in what was, until very recently, the best economy, according to our president, that we have in decades. How it is that so many young people can be disconnected from mainstream economic opportunity, I don't know how the Newsweek cover article can say that millennials have it good, or that young people have it good, because they clearly do not. In fact, we're facing the silent crisis where we have just huge numbers of young people who've fallen off the national conversation, off the radar screen about, you know, our national conversation on inequality, opportunity, and who is getting ahead and who is not. I think that article is really missing the boat.
So the political class in general seems to be missing the boat, given that we are constantly being told that the economy, well, at least pre-coronavirus, was booming, and that that unemployment was at an all-time low. That number that you mentioned of young people who are not in school or don't have jobs, that seems to not be counted when economic indicators such as the official unemployment rate or the number of jobs that are added every month get touted, right?
Well, that's correct, Sonali. The unemployment rate is a misleading number in some ways, in many ways, because it really only counts the number of people who are looking for work. If you are a young person who's essentially given up or is shut out of the labor market, you're not actually counted in that denominator for the unemployment rate. The more accurate number is to look at the employment to population ratio or the workforce participation rate. And when you look at those figures, you will see that young people have been falling out of the economy for quite some time. And that is this disconnection that we are seeing. So this unemployment rate that's been touted really isn't an accurate picture of what is going on with the workforce, especially for youth.
Tell me about what you looked at in basing your book on. If these indicators are left out of our conversation, where did you go to find the real stories, to find that real research that shows the crisis facing America's youth?
Yes, so there are a couple of nonprofits. The one that's been doing some of the most, you know, groundbreaking work on this for a while in terms of data is the Social Science Research Council's Measure of America project. And they have been tracking disconnection in America for quite some time. Now, in the United Kingdom and in the OECD, the question of, you know, young people who are out of school and out of work has been measured for quite a while. In the UK, for instance, it's called NEETS, stands for Not in Employment, Education and Training. And since at least 1999, the British government has been keeping track of this figure and releasing quarterly numbers on just how many young people are out of school and out of work. We haven't been doing that. You can't go to the Census Bureau's website and find that out, which is why we have to rely on nonprofits who are finding this data on their own. So the Social Science Research Council's Measure of America project, Brookings Institution has done some work as well. But I think one of the things we really need to do is begin to really measure this problem. That's why our nation hasn't paid attention to this crisis in youth, because we're not even counting young people in our consideration.
So what are some of the ways in which that disconnection is happening? What is the crisis? What do you mean by the crisis of disconnection?
So, you know, one of the, I think, underlying premises behind the Sam Hill's article, you know, he probably does see a lot of millennials and younger people who are doing well, but that is disguising what I think is a divergence in the experiences of young people. There's enormous amount of inequality that's going on. Young people who have, you know, education to go to the places where you can get a good job. The runway to adulthood is taking a lot longer than it used to. And if you have the ability to rely on your parents for a longer period, you might do well. But public policy is failing a very large percentage of young people. Take, for instance, young people who are in the foster care system. The outcomes are horrific there. The enormous numbers of young people who are in the criminal justice system, we are feeling those young people there. And then increasingly, we are seeing regional divergence. Rural young people are falling behind their urban counterparts. That's one of the surprises of disconnection. One in five rural youth is not in school, not in working. It's a much higher percentage than in cities, where there might actually be a little bit more physical proximity to educational opportunities or to jobs. One of the places that I profile in the book is southwestern Pennsylvania. And there, the disconnection rate is close to 75%, 3 out of 4 young people who are not in school, not working.
So there are rural youth, there are indicators about this disconnection in rural America and also in urban America, right?
That's correct. There are what I call opportunity deserts in both places. So on the one hand, you have these areas in rural Pennsylvania I talked about. And then in the other, I have a chapter on a neighborhood in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, by all accounts, Baltimore is doing great. You have Under Armour there. You have an Amazon facility that's opened up. But if you go to a neighborhood there called Sandtown, what you'll find are rows upon rows of boarded up townhouses. The high school there is what's still considered a dropout factory, with fewer than 60% of the students graduating at any given time. Bus service is unreliable. The young people I talk to there have to commute for hours, literally, to look for a job, let alone get to one. There, the opportunities are very few. Parents don't have connections to get young people into internships or jobs that pay. That is an urban opportunity desert and is just as limiting as a rural one.
It seems to me that the story about how celebrity and wealthy Americans buying their way, their kids' way into colleges, that was in the news, you know, several months ago, that actually ended up landing some people in prison, that too is part of this story, that more and more those young people who are making it are the exception rather than the rule, and they're making it because their parents are gaming the system because they can, because they are able to, which is also part of the greater story of wealth inequality, right?
Yes. I mean, that's a great example of the divergence I was talking about earlier in the young adult experience. I mean, we see inequality now on a much broader scale. But even within young people, you know, if you are a young person who's growing up in the right place with the right parents, with the right connections, and you're probably going to do fine. And it's because that reliance on connections has become actually a lot more important these days. There's a myth that in America, you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, that if you work hard enough, long enough, you will get ahead. And I think that's increasingly untrue because the structural obstacles that are getting in the way of young people have really gotten to the point where it's really impossible. No matter how hard you work, no matter how smart you are, no matter how dedicated you become, these structural obstacles stand in the way of your success. And that's what public policy needs to do, is recognize that these structural, geographical, cultural obstacles, educational obstacles exist, and pull them away one by one so everyone can get ahead again if they want.
I wonder if one of the things that stands in the way of this issue becoming more visible is our media's fixation on individual heroic stories, right? We'll hear about a kid who, against all odds, managed to get straight A's and get into college, you know, the five Ivy League schools on full scholarship. And those kinds of stories seem to suggest that if kids just work hard enough, they too can be like this exceptional young person.
Yes, I mean, that's one of the myths that I tackle in the book as well. I think there is this misperception that if a young person is disconnected, it's because of quote unquote poor life choices or quote unquote personal responsibility. And I think there is this stereotype about the disconnected young person being the 20-year-old guy who is just hanging out in their parents' basement. That's not what's going on here. As I said, you know, there are structural obstacles that are standing in the way of young people's success. And I spoke to so many young people in the course of researching this book who really had big aspirations for themselves. You know, they were trying to go to school, they were trying to get jobs, they were really trying to make it, but life was standing in the way.
Does the rise of the gig economy play a big role in this disconnection? Because when you measure job growth or how many jobs have been added to the economy, you don't see the quality of those jobs, the kind of job security that's available. And it seems to, I imagine that it would seem to American youth that for politicians, as long as they are, you know, driving a ride for a rideshare company, that means they have a job, but there's no necessarily job security, paid sick leave, or, you know, it just seems to me that the gig economy is more and more something that corporate America is relying on. And as young workers graduate school, if they even are lucky enough to do so, that this is the kind of job that's available to them now.
I think that's right. I mean, there's been a lot of emphasis, as you point out, on the growth in jobs. And sure, the number of jobs might be great, but the quality of those jobs, as you point out, is subpar. You know, there have been surveys of young workers, and large majorities of young workers believe that they are in jobs that are, you know, that they're underemployed, you know, that they're not using the education that they do have. It's harder for young people to break into industry these days, to get that foothold into the labor market. Employers have cut down on the amount of training that they do. There are fewer apprenticeship programs, work experience programs than there should be. It's a lot easier for an employer to find somebody, an older worker who may have some experience, rather than to take a chance on investing in a younger person. And that's something else that needs to change with the private sector as well. We need to move away from the temporary workers, gig workers, throwaway workers, and really begin to invest again in workers and in young workers in particular.
What is the racial disparity within American youth? I imagine that just as in so many other social indicators, people of color tend to fare worse than their white peers.
That's absolutely right. Now, Measure America finds that if you are a person of color, you are about twice as likely to be a disconnected young person than someone who is not. Interestingly, the gender balance is about equal. Among women, if you're young women, if you are disconnected, it's likely because you're a young mom. If you are a young man who is not in work and not in school, it is likely because that you have been just as involved in some way. And of course, you know, the racial disparities in the criminal justice system have been documented, and those are really tragic consequences we see there as well.
Right. And this is not a new issue. We've been having this conversation thanks largely to the work of grassroots activists who've been working to reform the criminal justice system, that it starts in school, that youth of color, that kids of color start being disciplined at disproportionate rates in schools. We hear stories of police arresting even little kids under the age of 10 who are Black for acting out. And all of that, of course, sets a kid up very early in life to be repeatedly criminalized, right?
No, that's right. And a young person who is not in school is not going to be set up for success. You know, as you point out, young people of color are disproportionately singled out, disproportionately expelled, disproportionately suspended, and then disproportionately in detention. You know, incarceration is probably one of the most catastrophic outcomes that can happen for a young person. Not only are these young people deprived of any opportunities to further their education or to get any valuable job skills, I cite in my book, is that fewer than 10% of any detention facilities have any sort of educational or training opportunities available to those who are incarcerated. Young people are also more likely to be sexually assaulted while they are in detention. And most tragically, 70 to 80% of them are likely to reoffend within 2 to 3 years. There's no clearer way, shorter way to short-circuiting someone's chances for success than to have them involved in the criminal justice system and incarcerated as absolute sabotage of a young person's odds of success.
Let's focus on what needs to be done first. I mean, before we get to the structural policy recommendations that you might make of government, what are the young people that you've talked to say they need first and foremost to deal with this crisis they're facing?
Caring adults. Absolutely. Caring adults. I mean, when you think back to who made a difference in your life as a young adult, when I think back to who made a difference in my life, it's that mentor, it's that teacher, it's that coach, you know, it's that parent. And for many young people who are disconnected, that missing element is the lack of mentorship in some way, the lack of support, and the lack of bridge to opportunities. And there are a number of, you know, nonprofit organizations that are trying valiantly and succeeding in providing the kinds of connections and support that young people need. And those organizations need a lot more funding, a lot more support, and to be lifted up as examples of what all of us can do to end this crisis.
And then what are the systemic issues that need to be addressed? I imagine that some of the broad policy prescriptions that are promoted by progressive folks and organizations such as Medicare for All, raising the federal minimum wage, et cetera, would go a long way toward addressing this crisis. It's no surprise that, say, a presidential candidate like Bernie Sanders is hugely popular among American youth.
You know, yes, but the caveat there is that, you know, the minimum wage, things like that are helpful for those who are already connected to the workforce in some way. When we're talking about those who have no connection, there are even deeper structural challenges that need to be addressed, and that is reforming the child welfare system. I alluded to this earlier, but, you know, the young people who age out of the foster care system, there are about 20,000 of them. A third of them are going to end up homeless. A third of them are going to end up incarcerated. Fewer than half will have a job by the age of 26. The child welfare system, a system that is supposed to be protecting the welfare of these kids, is doing the exact opposite of that. So fixing that system is paramount. Fixing the criminal justice system is paramount. Diverting more young people, especially nonviolent young people, young offenders, away from incarceration. Third, the educational system, so that young people who are graduating from high school actually have skills that they can use in the workforce. And then four, fixing this problem of geographic inequality, where young people who are marooned in places where the factories have gone away or where the jobs are gone can still find some way of success where they live. I think what's happening with young people is a symptom of these broader trends in inequality that are kind of ripping the country apart, and they're a harbinger of worse things to come. And yes, I agree with you. We need universal health care. We need to have better quality jobs, but we need to lift up those who are falling to the very bottom of the economic ladder because they have no access at all to that first step on the ladder.
The danger of having a growing group of disconnected youth is what exactly? I mean, we see in history, we see in other parts of the world that when there are large numbers of young people who feel disconnected, that the political direction of the country can get really dark really fast.
Yes, that's right. Youth unemployment is actually a global problem. And it's no coincidence that when you have high rates of youth unemployment, you will see political unrest, and you do see that in other parts of the world. The other problem is that young people who are disconnected will grow up to be older people who are disconnected, and that is a deeply costly problem for society. There's a Columbia University study that was done in 2015 that calculated that the total social burden, including direct costs, of someone who remains disconnected will add up to about $700,000 over their lifetime. That's direct costs for welfare, perhaps if they become homeless, for incarceration, for medical care, things like that. But also that lost economic gain from having someone who is not working. We're not collecting taxes from them. This person could be an innovator, could be an entrepreneur, and we're losing out on all that economic opportunity. We will lose as a country ultimately if we don't engage the, you know, 1 in 9 who are currently not part of the economic mainstream.
And I don't know, it always rubs me the wrong way to think about youth, think about people as economic opportunities and innovators. They're real people in the end, right? I mean, they're also, they need to have their own futures. They need to have the opportunity to have lives and choose their paths, whether or not they're going to contribute to the economy. Just even having happiness and contributing to their own lives is so, so important. I know you didn't mean that, but it just that language of the corporatist rubs me the wrong way.
Yes, I mean, as a whole person, you know, and the young people I talk to very much want to be contributing. You know, they all had big dreams for themselves in some way. You know, they wanted jobs that were going to get them financial independence, but also to contribute to their communities. One young man I spoke to who was on the path, you know, his ambition was to create jobs for his community to give back, you know, what he's received. So I take your point, but I do mean that we're missing the whole person. We're missing the potential, the human potential. And part of what I said was directed at those conservatives out there. This is why I think this is a bipartisan issue. If you're a conservative, you should care about this too, if only from a pure pragmatic standpoint. But from a humanitarian standpoint, from a social justice standpoint, absolutely. We cannot deprive anyone of the opportunities to live as a full human.
Well, Anne, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with your book.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
My guest has been Anne Kim. She's Director of Domestic and Social Policy at the Progressive Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., and a contributing editor to Washington Monthly. We've been discussing her new book, Abandoned: America's Lost Youth and the Crisis of Disconnection. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.